Hi, I'm Dr. Poppy Moon, and I'm a professor of both school and clinical mental health counseling. I'm a licensed professional counseling supervisor and a national board certified counselor. Join me as I give you tips, techniques, and insight into the world of counseling. All right. Why do we do groups? Especially why do we do groups in school? We've got the American School Counseling Association. They back groups, and we also have backing from ACA. The neat part about them is groups are efficient, and they offer more resources and viewpoints on that. When you're working as a school counselor, especially if you are in a school where you're like one counselor for 750 people, because I think that's like the cutoff. You know, like when I was a school counselor, it was me with 156 students. And so that was fairly easy to be able to, you know, see some kids individually. But if you're at a school and you've got that many and they're just, you're slammed with stuff, it's hard to meet with that many kids. So I think that small groups are a good place to work with a particular type of kid. I would not recommend a group for, say you've got that kid that's super annoying in class. He's always bugging the teacher. He always has to be funny and say stuff, you know, and is just always popping off about things. He's not going to be a super successful group member because he's going to kind of try to take over your group. Does that make sense? And you're going to have to constantly be like, sit down, be quiet. You want group kids that really are cool with being with other kids and that they just want to learn some stuff about themselves and be better at some things. So when I am getting ready to start a group, I kind of screen those kids, and I'll talk to you a little bit about that more. But the neat thing about groups, it lets kids know, hey, you're not alone in all of this. You know, I know that especially like middle schoolers and high schoolers, when they start to have, you know, dating problems or relationship problems, they think it's just me. I'm the only one that experiences stuff like this. Or our younger kids in elementary, if there's divorce, they feel like maybe I'm responsible for it. Probably no one else has gone through something like this, so they don't understand how I'm feeling. You see that a lot. And so being able to put these kids in a place with other kids have similar problems, it makes them think, maybe I'm not so alone. And it also lets them be with children who truly understand what they're talking about. It also is a fun place to practice new behaviors. So if we have a social skills group, maybe I have some kids in there that are having a hard time reading social cues. Maybe they're not able to read body language very well. So if like someone's angry with them or frustrated with them, they're not picking up on that. In a group, you can do some fun role plays with the kids. And my favorite thing to do is show something wrong and then show something correct, because they have a whole lot of fun with that. So I might do a skill and they're like, no, Dr. Moon, that's not how you do it. I'm like, okay, guys, show me how it's done. And then they do it for me. And that's a lot of fun for them. So they can practice different types of behaviors. And then I can come back and say, yes, you got that good. That is exactly how I want to do it. Now let's have everybody else have a chance so we can see them do it. You can give them feedback on what you're seeing from the group. It's also fun to let other group members give feedback as well. Don't let them give feedback that is hurtful to other members. It's okay for them to give honest feedback, but don't let it be like kind of like a malicious kind of intent. And really most kids aren't going to do something like that, but sometimes they can be snide or whatever. And you just want to keep your eye on that and make sure that the kids are with you and they're giving feedback that is actually helpful. And like I said, simulation of real life encounters. One of the things that I did in a social group, we were learning how to do introduction skills, just basic introduction skills for some kids that had not mastered that when they were younger. And I had a bunch of costumes. If you guys ever work with little people or elementary or middle school kids, it's fun to kind of have a costume box. What I like to do so everybody can wear a costume is I slip them up the back. So even if you have like a kind of a big boy in there, you know, if he's going to be Mrs. Smith, he can kind of pull on a fluffy dress to be Mrs. Smith. Because guys, start collecting fun stuff. Get you a trunk and start collecting costumes and all kinds of neat things. Even high school kids get a huge kick out of being able to do something like that. So I let them pick out outfits or whatever, and then they can do presentations. So like, I'm introducing you to my mother. This is Mrs. So-and-so. This is my friend, Stan. Stuff like that. So the kids get a kick out of doing kind of some play therapy activities with it. And it's letting them simulate exactly what they would see, which would not happen so much if it was just you and that kid in your classroom by yourself. It's more fun with that. It also is a safe place for them to share, a safe place for them to practice these skills before they're going to use them in the real world. And they're also learning because they're watching their peers, and their peers are doing different things. Any questions so far? Any comments? If you guys have any comments of something you've experienced, you can let me know, and I would like to hear about it. I always like it when I'm lecturing, everybody just looks. I just see all these little faces just looking at me, and I just want to make sure that y'all are with me. Okay, so here I kind of talked a little bit about feedback. You can allow them to comment on each other's things, not to be malicious, but sometimes for kids, if they get feedback from their peers, it hits a little bit differently and better than if it's coming from me or some other kind of adult. So I might be, let's see, I'm going to pick on Hannah. Let's say Hannah is showing us something and Lucas is over there and Lucas is like, Hannah, I really liked how you did, how you talked to your friend that you were angry with. Like say we did a role play and she talked it and Lucas is like, I thought you did a good job on that. That's going to resonate with her probably more than if I'm just like, great job, good job, you nailed it. Because then I would say to Lucas, well, tell us a little bit more about what you thought was great about what Hannah did. And then he's giving her personalized advice. And I promise you, all the other kids in the group will want to also give some personalized advice, which gets in for some really great conversations. When you start doing groups at first and you're not super used to them, even if you've been a school teacher for a long time, being a counselor is just a little bit different because like the groups change. When you're teaching, your groups are more academic oriented, but when you're counseling, it's more social oriented. So you're going to work a little bit harder to try to pull that out of your students to pull out that social emotional learning and for you to be able to facilitate that with them. So it's great. It's more powerful when the students do it and when the students can kind of lead the, can lead the class. Here's this one. Members can hear first impressions and update their impressions. So I'm talking to my kids and I say, Stella, what do you think about what you've been seeing in group today? And she can say, well, from what all I'm seeing, this is the impression that I'm getting. And then I can let her say what she says. And then I'll kind of piggyback on that. So I'll pick another group member and I'll say, hey, what do you think about what Stella says? Is she right? Is she wrong? Would you change that? Get that kid's opinion and then another kid. So that way you're getting the whole group trying to talk. It's hard at the very beginning of small groups to get kids to talk. Maybe not. Maybe you'll get lucky. But they'll be nervous because it's kind of an alien situation. They're like, who is this lady in school? I don't see her all the time, except when she's doing guidance. Why am I here outside of class? I don't understand. So you can kind of put them a lot at ease if you're able to try to get all of them to come together and start to talk a little bit better. So we've got a whole ton of groups that we can do. Different types of groups are education groups, discussion groups, task-oriented groups and growth, experiential. You're probably not going to do a whole lot of experiential. Counseling and therapy, support, and self-help. So this was on the little PowerPoint that I was given. I spiced up the PowerPoint, though, in Canva, so it would look fun for you. And it says here, a counselor may form a group to discuss a topic, explore personal problems, or achieve a goal. Normally, this is what the school counselor is looking at. These groups down here, these growth, self-support, self-help, normally those are things that you would probably do with an adult in a clinical setting. As a school counselor, you're up here. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with the school counselor doing needs assessment. Have you guys covered that in any of your other classes? Some of you have. Okay. If you haven't, needs assessment is basically when you make maybe a multiple choice form. Maybe you have some discussions with parents, maybe on parent night. You meet with teachers at their faculty meeting. And you're like, what do you need from me as the school counselor? What are the most important things that you're seeing your kids, you're seeing these problems? What's the most important thing that you would like for me to address with them during this school year? it's helpful if at the end of the school year, like now, I know schools are out now, but kind of like ask your teachers at the very end of the school year, what was their main problem this year? What would you like to see me work on next year? And that's helpful for them to tell you that, because then the next year when you're planning your school counseling program, you can say, that those kids were having trouble with being disruptive, or those kids were having trouble with academic skills or whatever. And that gives you a good idea. You can also do that at the beginning of the year with parents, with teachers, and get a needs assessment. Then you can figure out what types of groups will work well for you to deal with or explore personal problems or talk about a specific goal. So that kind of gives you an idea of what it is. So here we go, group theories. There are three group theories that really work best in small groups at school. Our good friend, cognitive behavioral therapy, solution-focused therapy, and reality therapy. Let's see, group theories, having a group. I just don't want to read bullets off to you when you can do that. Okay. All right. So why do we pick a counseling theory? Because there's so many of them, and they're all so different, and sometimes they can be overwhelming. The reason we pick a counseling theory is so it gives us a roadmap on how we're going to go. So for example, cognitive behavioral therapy. We're going in on cognitive behavioral therapy because we're going to work on, I'm sorry, that's not the one I wanted. Solution focused. Solution focused is kind of like where I like to come from. I see the problem. I see how we can do the solution, and I'll figure out a workaround on how we're going to get to it. Like, what three techniques am I going to use as a workaround? Theories are great because they have techniques that go along with them. And if you like that theory, then you can keep it, and then you can just use it to kind of follow along on how you want to work. But there's different ones. If you're not familiar with a lot of counseling, school counseling theories, we have this cool thing at the library, and you can just log on, and in their databases, they have this thing called psychotherapy.net. I can show it to you. It is so cool. It is a video library. It has a ton of videos in there for all kinds of things that you might be interested in. So it's got these therapies like this CBT, solution-focused reality therapy. It's got those in there, and it shows you how to use those. I think there's one in there that is super quick. It's on solution-focused brief therapy. It's 13 minutes, and the guy just goes through what it is, and he does a small demonstration, and then boom, you could just roll with it. Some of the other ones, like person-centered therapy or Adlerian therapy, they're great. They're great, but it's not really realistic in the school, okay? But hey, if you're interested in them, go ahead and watch them, because that's only going to make you a better counselor. Sometimes when I'm cleaning the house and I just want to have something in the background I'm kind of listening to, I'll go to the database and I'll just pick something that I think is interesting, and I'll just listen to it while I'm mopping the floor or something like that. And I'm hearing that information. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. I'll put that back in my mind so I can use it next time. Now, some of the videos are specific to other things you might be interested in. How to do therapy with soldiers with PTSD. How to deal with difficult adolescents. How to interview clients. How to do, and probably because you're not in clinical, you won't be doing so many interviews as you would if you were in a community setting, doing an intake interview, but still some of those things are relevant and you might think that they're interesting. So psychotherapy.net, and I will put a link in the Blackboard shell on that. So if you are interested, you can go out and check it out. Okay, leadership functions. I love these people here. I always think about them because you know they're the stock photos that are on there. So I wonder about like what it was like for them, like this dude over here that's thinking. Was the cameraman like, okay, look like you're thinking. And he's like, okay. And this girl over here with a lollipop, I don't even know what's going on with her. She just came with the presentation. And I said, I'm going to keep her. So, you know, she's got this lipstick. I don't know. I think about weird things like that. You probably don't think about that. But anyway, I like them. I thought they were fun. Okay. So the best thing that you can do as a group counselor is have some of these characteristics. And that is, you care about the kids. You are protective of the kids. They know that you're that safe person. They know that you're going to accept them no matter what. As a school counselor, you guys are going to hear some stuff, and you're going to think in your mind, "Whoa!" As teachers, have y'all had that before where you hear something about a parent or and you're like, whoa, that happened? And you're like, oh, I can't believe I'm hearing this. It's okay to do that in your mind. You don't have to feel bad about it because all of us are always kind of shocked and like, oh, I had no idea this was going on. So keep it in your mind. But whenever you do hear a kid say something to you that makes you want to do that, just figure out, how am I going to keep my poker face and be like, yes, okay, yeah, no, it's interesting. You know, tell Dr. Moon I want to work with you. My two terms, and you can coin this if you like, is I like to help and support. So whenever a student talks to me about something, I say, well, you know, my job as a counselor is to help you and support you. So I'm hearing you talking about this situation. I can see where it would be. It's stressful for you. It's really bothering you. And I can see that. And so we're going to work together and we're going to find the answer to it. And if you and I can't find the answer to it, then I'm going to find someone else that can help us with the problem. So I always want the student to feel safe. Like, I'm that person that's going to, you know, that's going to help and support them. And they feel that they can come to me. I'm not a super political person, and I'm not one that's very good at talking about, you know, like different types of issues with, you know, trans kids or the different political stuff that's going on with legislation for LGBTQ kids. It's hard. Sometimes for me, it's hard to know what to say because I don't know sometimes where our boundaries as counselors are. You know, I don't want to talk to a kid about something and then somebody come back or their parent come back and say, you talked to my kid about this or this or that. So I think it's important for you guys and for me too, to kind of watch what's happening in these political situations that's going on with school counselors around the United States and know where our limits are on what we can and can't say. We need to advocate for the profession. That's in our code of ethics. That's what we do. But it's getting kind of weird. Some of you guys may have seen over in Texas that they have passed a bill that instead of hiring school counselors, they would be able to hire chaplains in their school. I don't know if you guys have heard this. They passed the bill and it's going to the governor and they think it might be signed. So that would mean you would have an unlicensed person chatting with your children. And I don't understand, you know, how that works. So always, always, when kids come to you, even if they talk about things and you're like, is this a political issue? Is this someplace, you know, is this something that I feel comfortable and as a counselor, guys, go to your colleagues, go to your friends, go to your site supervisor, come to me and we'll figure it out together. But I don't know all the answers. And are most of you guys in ASCA, do you guys get the little stuff that comes from ASCA? Okay. They're pretty on top of a lot of this stuff. So I like to read that just so I know what am I supposed to say according to ASCA. But you also have to think about, what does my district want me to say? So whenever you have a kid say something and you're not sure, just say, hey, we're going to figure it out, and then go and check with some other people. And I hate that I have to say that, but it's hard sometimes. Okay. So another thing that you do is manage time. You enforce the rules and you set limits. Those kids are going to push you. I had a group. When I first started out as a school counselor, I am not the best disciplinarian in the world. I'll be honest with that. I'm a good counselor, but I'm not the best disciplinarian. Especially, I had this, like, maybe my first year as a school counselor, I was going to do a small group with some fifth grade girls who were having some problems. So already I set myself up for an exciting group experience. But they were so mean to each other. They said ugly things to each other. And I didn't feel comfortable enough in my role as a school counselor to be like, that's not what's happening in this group. This is not the kind of group that does that. So before you start your groups, think through your mind, what are some things that might be difficult for me just personally that I would need to work on in the group? And so something like that for me, I need to be work on, Poppy, what are your boundaries? What are my boundaries that I want to see in the group? I don't want to see those girls. I don't ever want to be in that situation again where I have a group like that. So how will I respond to the girls if they start to get a little too much? How will I set those boundaries for them? Because I'm the leader, right? I don't want them to be the leader. So I had to work on that on myself. When you start as a school counselor, some days you may be like, ah, everything was horrible. I'm a horrible school counselor. And that's not true. It's just a process of learning who you are and how you become this person. And I'm here for you. I'm going to help you do that. So setting the rules, setting the limits. And then, of course, your function is to be supportive and to be reassuring. One day, I will do my Dr. Moon's down and dirty tips for you. And these are tips that I have learned being a counselor for 20 years. But one of the things I like, and you might want to do this in your school office, is I have a clock on every wall. So that way, when I'm doing a group session, I don't have to take my phone and pick it up and look at it. I don't know. That just bothers me, thinking like, oh, this person is like, maybe I would think she wants the group to be over. Is she tired? Is she bored of doing this? You know, so in order for me not to do that, I have a clock. So I can be in the group and I can nod about what we're talking about. Then I can kind of look up and scratch my head. I can see what time it is. So I know, okay, we've got 10 minutes left. And then we got 5 minutes left. I say, okay, game, we got 5 minutes left. But they don't know that I am doing that. So wherever I am in the room, I can always see what time it is. And that way I can always keep my groups and, you know, just individual stuff as well. You know, if you had an individual client with you, you could also do that as well. Hang on. Okay. So that's your function. So effective leaders, you're just a cool person. You're warm, you're caring, you want to do this. And obviously, all you guys are here to be school counselors, so I'm not worried at all. You got to be aware and confident and recognize others' feelings and reactions. One thing I think is important for you to do is to learn feeling words. And you can go on Google and you can just Google feeling words, positive and negative feeling words. And it'll pull up a huge list of all different types of words. I think this is important, especially with young people, that we start teaching them these words. Because most kids just know sad, mad, glad, angry. It's kind of like that's it. That's all there is. So in my groups, I think it's great to kind of maybe bring up a different word or two every group session, just so you start teaching them new things. Just kind of stick that in there. So I would recommend that you do that. Okay, so here are some of the potential challenges. Skipping from topic to topic. You want the group to go one way. I want us to talk about this particular social skill. And you've got one kid who's like, well, what about this? What about this? Work on how am I going to stay on topic when the kids are kind of trying to go other ways? How will you bring that back in? Sometimes you'll have a kid, even if you've screened your group really, really well, you'll have a kid that's super chatty and will always want to be the one that's talking. You'll be like, okay. Okay, John, we've heard from you. Let's hang out just a second and let's hear from some other people. And sometimes that John is, it can be a problem. So if you find you have a kid that's always dominating, after the group, later in the day, you could just pull them in and say, hey, the group's for everybody. Everybody needs to be able to have a chance to say something. And I realize that you have a lot to say, and I would be happy to talk with just you, you know, for, you know, 10 or 15 minutes, maybe this week, and you can tell me about those things. But when we're in group, we need to be respectful and we need to listen to stuff that everybody's talking about. And so that's one of the things. Side conversation. This is what, happened in my original terrible group with the girls, is they wanted to have side conversations with each other about other girls who were in the group and things that they said. That's also a problem. So that's something that you'll want to be able to address when you're doing small groups. So these girls are having conversations, well, let's break them apart. Let's revamp how I have my group set up so that everyone is not doing that. Attend sporadically at school. I don't think that's going to be such a problem, because if you've locked them in to a 4-week group, you're just going to go get them from class. I mean, if they're absent a lot, I guess sporadically, but you know, that's not really going to be one for us. Okay. Being shy or withdrawn. That's a hard one. When you have a shy or withdrawn kid, because you want everybody to share and you want everyone to talk. And that kid might just be like, I don't want to say anything. And it can be frustrating for you because you want to hear what they do have to say. So I would recommend on that is, again, outside of the group, pull them out and say, hey, you know, when we're in group, I noticed that you're kind of shy. I noticed that sometimes you feel nervous and think that people may not want to hear what you have to say. But let's practice together about what you could say next week. Like, what are the things that you would want other people to know about you? And I would talk with the kid about that and we'd share and I'd say, okay, so next week, first thing we're going to do, I'm going to have you talk about those things with the group. You don't have to talk for a long time, but just tell them just, you know, a few things that you told me. Okay. So you're doing work behind the scenes as well as in the actual group. Let's see. Be resistant. Anger towards others. Sometimes in... I had this in a boy group that I was doing. It was a boy friendship group. And some of the boys were mad. What were they mad about? I think what had happened was, like, a few of them didn't like a kid that was in the group. So anytime this kid said something, they would be rude to him and the kid would get angry back with them. And it was just a bad dynamic with that going on. So if you have, if you notice something that there's anger going on or that there's pressure in the group, it's okay after the session to pull those few students that you're having a problem with together. And once again, share with them, hey, this is group. This is how we act in group. Let's talk about your problem together right now. So when we have our next group session, it's not such a problem. Again, stopping attending the group is not a hard one. Anger towards leader. I've not really seen this so much in school counseling. This does happen in community counseling, but not so much with school. So I'm not gonna point on that. And this one is the most important, confidentiality. The problem with groups in schools is that you cannot promise confidentiality. You can talk about it at the beginning. You can share with them everything about confidentiality, why it's so important, why our group is so special, why this and that. But that does not mean that children understand that they have to keep that to themselves. So be aware and share that with the students at the top. Say confidentiality is important. Sometimes, though, people will break our limits of confidentiality. And that just is sad for the whole group. But I'm going to hold you guys to it. I think that you are old enough. I think that you understand. And you are needing to be protective of your other group members. That's the thing I want to see, is that you guys are protected with each other. So if you see that they're breaching confidentiality, you probably want to kind of go over that again and again. But you can't promise it, and that's hard. Okay, so here I told you this at the very beginning, data-driven. You want to do your small groups with the needs assessment. Okay, let's see. Here's some tips on small groups. I'm almost done, so hang in there with me. We'll be done just a second. This one here says keep groups between 3 to 5 students. I don't mind it if you have 4 to 6 students. You're picking the group. You're the one that's being able to pick out these kids for the group. You can select everybody that you want. So you can keep it 3 to 5, but 4 to 6 also works. And sometimes 4 to 6 is better because you don't have a whole lot of time. Like, it would be easier for you to run a 4 to 6 instead of 2 3-to-5 groups. Does that make sense? It's just more, it just works out a little bit more. Okay. You want to make your groups interactive and engaging. Sometimes that's hard. That's why I was telling you when we were talking about the 4-week group earlier, Google things to find out what's fun and creative. And so much stuff on there. So just Google it and say, hey, what would kids like? Oh, this is an awesome art activity. Okay, I'm going to use this in there. So make it fun, make it age related. Let's see what else. Start with check-ins and check-outs. When you start the group, it's a great idea to kind of just go around and do a mood check. Hey, let's talk about everybody's mood, and maybe even have like a little mood check strip and say, okay, on the strip, Ashley, on the strip, where are you number 1 through 5? And she would say, oh, I'm a 4 today. And I'd say, well, tell me what's going on that makes you a 4 in 2 sentences. And then she'll tell me what's going on. And so then I'll move around with everybody. So I'll have an idea where they are emotionally when they have come into the group. And then at the end, it's also a good way to check out again. Hey, so at the beginning of the group, you were feeling super frustrated about some stuff. You feeling better now? You still feeling frustrated? Where are you at? Okay. And that's a great way to kind of open and close what you're doing. Use group skills to foster validation. And integrative activities, discussion questions. Okay. That kind of goes along with everything. Okay. Is this going through? Okay, so this is an example that she gave for the first group that you would do. And this is kind of like that group that you're going to do for the 4-week group for this class. In the first group, these are some things that we'll be looking for. And this is the last part, and then we'll be done with this. Okay, so first week, she would like for you to do student introductions. So you would, and she has here, here, getting here, or not here. when you call out for them, or check in with the highs and lows. Like I was saying to you, check in, where's your mood right now? So you can do something like that. She wants you to have one goal for that session. And then another one, and this is, sounds fun, but it may not work for you, but this would be with little kids. Like, first group, hey, okay, so you're Tom. Tom, if you could be an animal, what animal would you be and why? And it's just a little bit of fun, kind of a little bit of an icebreaker that you would want to have. She has a class contract activity. That means that you would create just a form that's developmentally appropriate that you can go over with them and explain to them what a group is like and what's expected of them. And also that little bit about confidentiality in there. And you would have them sign that at the beginning of the session. Does that make sense that you're doing that? So you're checking in with them. You're giving them some information about what a group is like and having them sign that. And that you'll have this slideshow so you'll be able to look at it. She would like for you to do a feelings activity. And you're going to share with them that feelings aren't good or bad. They're not comfortable or uncomfortable. And they can think of an occurrence that they may or may not want to share with others. And then students will disclose to the group as they start to feel like they're trusting. This doesn't sound, if I'm hearing this, like if I was telling myself this, this does not seem 100% clear to me. I don't know if that seems 100% clear to you. So I'm going to kind of revamp that. I'm going to make you a new little video about the 4-week thing so that you can go back and maybe hopefully that'll make it a little bit more clear. But she does want you to have discussion questions at the end. So what ways was the group awareness raising? Discuss the importance of sharing a disclosure in a group. And what are some techniques that you could use to foster greater facilitation with the groups in the future? So you're doing those discussion questions at the end so the kids can wrap up everything that you've talked about in the group. But yeah, this is a little confusing to me. Okay, it's closing round. In a few words or phrases, say what stood out most about the group today. That's easy. And every member can give that for about 15 seconds. Homework. I love homework, especially in individual sessions. Homework might work for group members if you have them in middle school or high school. Might not work so well for little kids because they forget to do stuff like that. But they could do some journaling about how they're feeling in the group. You could recommend that they have 30 minutes of me time. You could recommend that they could meditate or that every day they could say something positive about themselves or their overall demeanor. So that would just be some homework that you could give.